welcome to the 20 Minutes of Filler podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. This podcast is all about tabletop gaming in small proportions. Now, here are your hosts, Andy Lennox and game designer Jason Katarski.
Hello and welcome back. Welcome to episode 35 of the 20 Minutes of Filler, the beginning of the end, part 3, where myself, Jason Katarski,
and me, Andy Lennox,
are going to talk about our top 10 games. Today we're talking about numbers 4, 3, 2, and 1 right here on 20 Minutes of Filler of the games that we loved this year. Most of them came out right in 2014. But also, we're going to get into sharing a little bit of something else we're interested in. We talked about books. We talked about video games. Now we're going to talk about some music that we've been rocking with. So, Andy, you like music?
Well, I love music.
I don't know. I think we talked a little bit about this before in the past. Like, before our gaming lives intersected, we intersected in musical lives in a way.
We did. We played a lot of the same shows.
Yeah.
We played the same shows on multiple occasions, not even in Flint sometimes, too.
That's right. I remember we were playing in Traverse City, Michigan. Yeah. And you guys rolled up, and I think you were playing at another bar, and we were like 3 hours away from home, and you guys were playing at a bar on the other side of town, and we were playing an all-ages venue on this side of town, and yeah, that was kind of a strange thing. So we knew each other, we had some mutual friends, but we didn't really hang out, but yeah, Andy's a guitar player, and plays some rock and roll music, and yeah, that's kind of that. So music is pretty important to us, I think. So
let me tell you, this year was a good year to be a 30-something metalhead. Because a long-defunct band, At the Gates, released a new album called At War with Reality. Their last album that they released was in, like, 98, I think, called Slaughter of the Soul, and it was like this brilliant metal thrash awesome album that pretty much everybody I know is like, have you heard it? Like, if they're into metal, they're like, have you heard At the Gates? And then they put their At the Gates CD in, you know.
Does At the Gates have? Is it like a singer or like a growler or a yeller?
He's a growler. Yeah.
okay
But they released a new one this year, and it's really good. And if you are into that kind of thing, you will also be into that. The other reason it's a good year to be a 30-something metalhead is Faith No More.
Oh, dude.
Reformed. They put out a single.
What?
Yeah, the single's out. Their album's coming out, I think, in February. But yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Dude, did you see the live performance video of them at the record store in California?
No.
It's like
they played a record store?
Yeah, it was like it's a famous record store, like, as far as indie record stores go. But, like, you know, no big deal. A couple Connor people crammed in here, and Faith No More on stage doing songs. Like,
awesome.
Dude, it was awesome. Unbelievable. Yeah, to see those guys doing that.
Yeah, so that's the flashback kind of thing that's super exciting for me. And then there's Mastodon put out a new one. I think their albums just get better and better every year, every time they do one. This one's called Once More Around the Sun. It's a lot more singy, less growly, and just a little bit more like spacey, and it's really fun.
Yeah, the singer and then, of my old band tried to get me. He was really into them, and I was like giving it a try, and I wasn't sure yet, but it was worth. I'm not super into metal, but like I was like, this is good. This has texture and depth to it, you know.
Yes, and the new album is a little like, there's pop hooks in it. Like, there's hooks, you know. Like, that's catchy, and you'll be singing it like later. It's cool.
Awesome.
Another good one is a doom metal band called Pallbearer. Foundations of Burden is their follow up to their first album, Sour. I still like their first album better, but this one is really, really great. And then the other one that I've been listening to a lot lately is the new Weezer album, Everything Will Be All Right in the End.
Oh, dude, that album rips.
I have not been listening. I have not really listened. So this is another reason why it's good to be a 30-something
yeah,
metalhead.
Seriously.
I sort of followed Weezer after, like, they came back with the Green album, and then everything after that I sort of, like, half-heartedly followed, and it was okay. I was sort of, you know, it was hit or miss, and there was good songs on it. This whole album is just, every song is good.
It is. Like, for me, like, the first two albums are awesome, the Blue Album and Pinkerton. I give that Pinkerton is one of the best albums of all time, in my book. And this one hits, it's right between those two albums for me.
Yeah, it's in that pantheon. It's right there. It's so good.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's funny because your games are a little bit heavier than my games. My game preferences, just like your music, is a little bit heavier.
Just a little bit heavier.
Just a little bit. Yeah, and it's funny because I'm feeling like a 30-something throwback guy right now too, because all the bands that I'm listening to are like the super, they're like power pop, like in the vein of like Dinosaur Jr., just like alternative rock stuff, but new. And it's funny because I got into punk rock around that time, and I was too cool for anything that wasn't punk rock in my head, so I missed a lot of stuff. So I'm listening to a lot of actual 90s rock and roll, like stuff like Buffalo Tom and a lot of Dinosaur Jr., and loving it, like I'm hearing it for the first time. But there's a couple bands that, dude, I just love. I cannot stop listening to Cheap Girls. And be careful when you Google that, guys. but Cheap Girls are a band from Lansing, Michigan. And they're my old friends, like two out of three of the guys used to be in a band that my old band played with all the time. So we've known each other for years, and they were a good band then, but then they grew up and like put out some of the best records I own. And they're like that kind of, I don't know, like Lemonheads, just fuzzed out, like poppy, simple songs, but really, really good. And they have a new album out called Famous Graves, and that one didn't hit me as hard as their previous album, Giant Orange. But the way that this band works is, like, I hear their album at first, and I'm like, I don't know, this one isn't as good as the last one. And then I can't stop listening to it. It grows on me and grows on me and grows on me. So Cheap Girls is just, they're awesome. And there's another band from the Flint area in Flint, Michigan, where I live, that I've been digging called Lawnmower. And they have a 7-inch out on a label called Savior Generation Records. And they're similar kind of deal, like just 3-piece, fuzzed out, really catchy, simple songs. I got to see them for the first time a couple weeks ago, and it was a blast. So it's always fun when you can like know the people that you're listening to, and that's always been a thing for me. The same thing about being in the game scene. Like, I love knowing the people who design the games that I'm playing. It's so fun. But nice. Yeah, that's what I mean. I really can't get away from that stuff right now. Cheap Girls and Lawnmower are like on heavy rotation. Not as heavy of rotation as Andy's heavy
My rotation
metal,
tends to be slightly heavier.
But that's okay. That's cool, man.
Let's talk about some games, man.
Let's do that. So we're going to talk about 4-3-2-1, top games of the year, and I have a 0.5 in there that I just have been playing like crazy, so we'll get to that later. So I'm going to go ahead and start. My number 4 is a game from Game Right Games. Just came out in the U.S. This year, but it was released by Adventureland Games a couple years ago in Australia, and that game is called Sushi Go. Simple
Can
card
you believe
drafting game.
I still have not played this.
No way, dude. No way.
I still haven't played it. I don't know how.
It's you got the cutest art ever. It's got little smiling pieces of sushi, you know? And you deal out cards. You pick one. You put it in front of you. You pass them to the left. You reveal them at the same time. And you're collecting sets. That's it. Like, certain kinds of things give you points. If you get, like, if you get three of this kind, you get points. If you get a wasabi before you get this kind, then it's going to double your points. You got some chopsticks that allow you to, like, you play that now, and later on you can pick it up and play down two cards instead of one. Really simple set collection drafting game. Kind of boils that drafting thing down to its, like, simplest form. 15-minute game. Super cute artwork. $10 at all the local Barnes & Noble stores. Totally worth picking up, dude. Nice. And I'm telling you, I'm in love with some drafting stuff right now. So, and this one's good, but there's more coming that I think you guys are gonna want to hear about pretty
soon.
That was a pretty blatant hint. Well, we'll leave it in there just in case.
Okay.
What's your number 4?
My number 4 is Coup Reformation. So Coup came out a while back, a couple years ago, I think. But the expansion came out this year, and it adds another role and a bunch more cards, and you can play like more players. And there's the expansion itself. There's teams, so you can. And this is the coolest thing about the. This is my new favorite like, Coup was one of my favorite games ever, and it, the expansion just made it even cooler. So it's way up there. And like, when you're on it, like the teams, the way the teams work is you can't target people that are on your team, but you can pay a gold to change teams, or you can pay 2 gold to change someone else's team. So it is lots of shenanigans at all times going on. And then if everybody's on the same team, then it's just a free for all. So you have to be careful of that too. Coup's my favorite. I know this is an expansion, so it's slightly cheating, but we actually played a 10-player game of this, and I didn't think it would work out. And people, just the way it worked out, the way it went around the table, like people who were eliminated, there was other games going on, and they could have like joined another game, but they sat and watched, and they were, it became like a spectator sport as time went on. Like, awesome. People were, it would be eliminated from the game, but then they had so much like invested in the game that they wanted to see how it would turn out. And it was just, it was a really cool experience. And when somebody finally won, there was cheering. like any game that causes a crowd of people to cheer is, has got to go on a list somewhere. So
yeah, dude, that's awesome.
Here it is on mine.
Yeah, I'll have to try that. I kind of gave up on Coup, the original. I prefer other games, but I think that adds some interesting ideas that I'd like to try out. Going to the other side of things, though, from big player counts to small player counts, my number 3 is a 2-player game from our hero, if you've listened to the podcast for any length of time at all, Seiji Kanai, and his game Brave Rats that Blue Orange put out. And it was called R when it was released in Japan. But Brave Rats is a really simple game. You have 0 through 7. Each player has 8 cards. And you each put one face down on the table and reveal them at the same time. Whoever has the higher number wins, unless the action of the card kind of somehow trumps the numbers that were played. So actions take precedence. So it's kind of like what Love Letter is for 3 or 4 for 2 players. Really good, because you can play Love Letter with 2 players, but it's not a great game, in my opinion. But I think Brave Rats is like Love Letter for 2, with a really cute theme. These 2 kind of battling clans, like Braveheart meets Rats. Really cute art. Comes in a little tin. It's like another $10 game, and I love it. I just play game after game after game. The first one to win 3 hands is the winner of the game. So it's simple. It kind of reminds me of my honorable mention too, like Eggs and Empires by Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback.
I was going to mention that.
Yeah, and it has a similar feel where it's the blind bidding kind of deal with card interactions and numbers. But I've gotten a lot more play out of Brave Rats, and I think that it's a good game because you can play it with kids, you can play it with gamers, and it's so quick that you can teach it and be up and running and it's it makes for a really great filler, and I dig it. So Brave Rats by Seiji Kanai from Blue Orange Games.
Awesome. My number 3 is definitely not a filler. It is on the opposite spectrum of filler, but this game is just so much fun. I can't not put it on the list, and that is Eldritch Horror.
Ooh, spooky.
Yeah, it's this game is silly. It's supposed to be horror. It's supposed to be spooky. But it is silly. It plays out sort of like a choose-your-own-adventure with dice rolling. And, you know, the reason why this really scratches an itch for me is because it plays a lot like one of my favorite games of all time, and that is Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Ooh.
Tales of the Arabian Nights is literally like a multiplayer choose-your-own-adventure game, and this plays a lot like that, except for there's a little bit more of that co-op game to it. Whereas Tales of the Arabian Nights, it doesn't really benefit you to work against or with each other. Just stuff is just happening to you. But it's fine because it's amazing stuff that's happening to you, and it's fun. This is the same kind of thing, except for there's a little bit of almost like a pandemic feel to it, because you've got the threats that are building up, and you're traveling around the world, and you have to coordinate your movement with everybody else. But then the cards have these really like rich thematic like things that happen, and you make choices based on things that happen on the cards, and all these funny stories will happen, and all this, you know, terror will happen to you and madness, and your character dies, you just grab another one, and or your character goes mad. There's just so many little like cool thematic touches to it. Like when your character dies or goes insane, their piece stays on the board, and then other characters can then go to your character and have an encounter with them. So they can like go to the hospital where they're being held because they've gone mad, and like get information from them, you know? And it makes this really cool story. I don't know. Eldritch Horror is just such a fun game. Everybody should play it. It takes kind of a long time to play, but it's again, it's one of those things where the experience is so fun. Like I've cut a game off early and not really felt cheated at all, because it was just, you know, we got an hour and a half in and it was like, we got to go. But that was a good time and we're done, you know, like, so Eldritch Horror, play.
Awesome. Awesome. That's shorter than Arkham too, isn't it?
Yes. It's shorter than Arkham, but not by a ton. Okay. Like once you know what you're doing, and if you have like an expedited setup, you can get a game in about 2 hours, especially if you're playing with like two or three players.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet. So number two for me is Red 7 from Asmodee Games by Carl Chudik and Chris Sizlik, I don't know, the owner of Asmodee Games. And this is, I think, did we talk about this a couple episodes ago?
We did.
We did.
We said it was a game that everyone had to own.
Yeah, that's really the deal. Like it's super simple game. It's 1 through 7 in 7 different colors. Each different color is a different rule. So there's a game in the middle, the top of the discard, or there's a card in the middle, which is the discard pile, which is called the canvas. And then you have the palette, which are the cards in your tableau in front of you. And on your turn, you can play a card either to your palette or to the canvas, or to your palette and then to the canvas. And the only thing is that you have to be winning the game at the end of your turn, so, or you're out.
Oh, and the winning, only thing.
That's the only thing.
No big deal. No, you big just deal. Have to be winning every round that you play.
Yeah, and it's things like the rule for the game red, if there's a red card in the middle, is the highest card wins, so whoever has a 7. And if there's a tie, it's the color primary of the rainbow, the Roy G. Biv, takes precedence. So there's one that's like the most cards below the number 4. There's the most even cards. There's the most cards in a row. Each of these are the different rules. And there's some other extra stuff, but you don't need it. You can play with it if you want to explore more. But the game, the core game itself is fantastic. It's like...
This game definitely belongs on my list. I played it after I made the list, and yeah. I've played it a bunch since. It's our new. I would say it's our go-to pub game because it's so quick, but it's too thinky to be a pub game. Like you really have to like figure out the puzzle that is your hand. It is the best hand management game I've ever played.
Yeah, dude, it's really, wow, that's saying something. Best hand management game you've ever played. That's really good. Yeah, it's a great game. Just came out towards the end of this year. Worth checking out. Red 7. I want to stop recording and go play it right now. But I can't. I'm gonna sneak in my 0.5 before you do your number 2. So
okay.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. You go ahead with your number 2.
Okay, my number 2 is Marvel Dice Masters.
Ooh.
No game has gotten more gameplay from me than this game. I've played tournaments upon tournaments. We started a tournament scene in my hometown.
You're awesome.
Just so we could get promos and stuff, which I keep winning because I win this game a lot because I'm good at it because I love it. if anyone wants to throw down at a con, I will have my deck there. Marvel Dice Masters, you probably heard a bunch about it. You buy packs, it's $1 for 2 dice and 2 cards, and it's sort of like Quarriors except for head-to-head combat. It plays a little bit like a, you know, like a CCG, you know, 2 people going at it against each other with dudes that have special abilities on them, and you know,
yep.
Pretty familiar theme, but like the reason I love this game is it scratches the deck building itch without being complex. Like you only pick 8 characters. So you just pick 8 cards and you've built your deck, and you want to, like, you play your deck and you don't like it, you want to change it, just change out whatever of the, you know, very few, like when you're playing Magic, that's 60 cards. That's a lot of choices that you have to make before you can even play. And that's true of a lot of CCG type games. And this game is great because you can get right into a game. You just throw a team together, and then your next game you put somebody else in, and and you could just keep iterating and making your deck better over and over again. It plays really quickly, unless you're playing with our group, in which case we overthink it a lot, and there's a lot of like weird control decks that we've been playing that stretch the game out a little bit longer than it should be going. But Marvel Dice Masters is awesome. It's light, but it has depth. Everybody should buy a starter and play, because it's a blast.
Yeah, it is fun. I've played with your guys a little bit, and I'm not good. You know, like I play it on the light side. Like, I don't see the combination with like heavy CCG player guys, and I was never that guy, you know. But I played it just a little more casually, and it's fun. I mean, it's got some things that, like, sometimes CCGs feel like they have these fiddly things, and I'm sure they're there for reasons, but it's just like little teeny rules that you just have to keep track of, like the order of operations kind of stuff that really bugs me. You know, like I ran into that with My Little Pony card game too, which if it was a hair bit lighter, that game would be a huge hit, I think. You know, like, I don't know, it could be.
It's a really fun game, but yeah, it's a little bit, I wish I could play with my 4-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
On some level, and there's just no way. It's
right,
just
too much going on. But yeah, Marvel Dice Masters, nice work, man. So this is where I sneak in my 1.5 choice. And the reason for this is I played it once earlier in the year, and there wasn't enough to put it on the list, but I got it for Christmas, and I have played 20 games of this with my wife, and I absolutely love it. And it's called Linko, or a Bluxen. Linko! Exclamation point is the American version from Ravensburger Games. It's by Wolfgang Kramer and Michael Kiesling, who Wolfgang Kramer is responsible for one of my favorite games of all time, Six Nimmt. And this game is like a hand management card game. It's all numbers. It's really simple art. They got a bunch of lynxes in different colors, numbers 1 through 13, and there's some jokers. And you have a hand of 13 cards, and on your turn, you can put down one card, or you can put down multiples of one card. And what happens is, if you put down the same amount of cards as someone else, then you have to look at the values. Is yours higher than theirs? If yours is higher than... If I play a pair of fives, and I look to Andy, and Andy has a pair of fours, then I have a choice to make. Do I choose to take his cards from him and put them in my hand? Or do I say, no, I don't want them, but force him to do something with them? If he has the choice of either discarding them and drawing new cards into his hand to replace them, or picking them back up and putting them in his own hand. So, like, that's the simple deal. Like, that's the whole game. You get points for how many... You get 1 point for each card that is in front of you when someone goes out. So it's just like you go around the table and you're like, okay, if I play these two fives, then I'm going to blux this guy and I'm going to blux this guy. But what do I want to do with those cards? Do I put them in my hand or do I want to make him do something with them because I want to run out of cards quicker and get the points through these things that are in front of me? The other thing is you can bait people. You know, so I can put down a really low pair hoping that you take those away from me because there are six face-up cards in the middle. And I want to snatch those up and put those in my hand because they take my three of a kind and make it a five of a kind that's going to give me 5 points because nobody's going to touch it. Again, one of those simple, simple games everyone should own. And it takes a little – it just seems, for some reason, it's really hard to wrap your mind around the first time or first couple times you play it. It takes a little while to get into the groove. It seems kind of counterintuitive. But it's really rewarding. So much that my wife kept on playing hand after hand after hand, like not even keeping score anymore because we were just like trying to figure out how to win, like trying to figure out what to do with these cards. So good. So Linko! Exclamation point from Ravensburger Games.
My 1.5 is Eggs and Empires, which I did not get a chance to play until after we recorded the last episode or the last couple of episodes. Eggs and Empires is awesome.
Yeah, I talked about it on the last one, and Matt and Ben Rule, and...
we don't need to say any more about it other than it's awesome, and my whole game group loves it, so...
Awesome. So, here it is, number one.
Number one.
From Andy and Jason, 20 Minutes of Filler, our favorite game of the year.
I feel like a lot of people are going to be feel cheated by my pick, but this is just the game that I love the most this year, that came out this year. And that is Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition.
You're such a geek.
It is... So, here's my story. Played the first game, first nerd game I ever played was D&D when I was like probably 7 years old. Played with my friend and his older brothers. Fast forward to like the early 2000s, I'm playing third edition. Everything's great. Haven't played since then. And then fifth edition comes out. So I played, I played fourth edition too a little bit. I played pretty much every edition of D&D in some form or another. This is by far my favorite, probably the best one. It reads like a love letter to all of the history of D&D. The Monster Manual is like a best of album for monsters.
Awesome.
Everything they did in this game really serves what's great about role playing. And with the last edition, they got really weird, and the game was really hard to pick up, and it wasn't for everybody. And that's a problem, because when people think about role playing games, when someone's like, "What's this role playing game thing all about?" they think about D&D. So D&D should be as accessible as possible. It should be like the flagship role playing game. Like, once you learn D&D and you're into it, like, that's where you know. But it needs to be, have this, you know, has an easy learning curve and have a very basic kind of, and this does all of those things. It simplified the system a ton. It gives you more options, but like makes it easier to make those choices. The books are just beautiful. The art is updated. The last few editions of the game, the art was sort of slipping towards anime a bit. And this one feels a little bit more like getting back to its like
classic fantasy art.
Yeah, and like so many of the weird creatures from the late 70s, early 80s are in the Monster Manual. And some of it's like, what possessed you to put this to make a monster that looks exactly like a stalactite that falls on your players' heads? It's just so weird.
That sounds awesome.
The game is really fun. The starter set is pretty cheap and comes with everything you need to play. When I started playing in third edition, I was dungeon mastering a lot of games, and I spent a lot of time like building adventures and trying to make everything perfect and spending too much time on it. And like when I picked it up this time, I was like, I don't have time for that crap. I just have to like pick it up and play. And so that's how we've been doing it, and just buying pre-made adventures. I barely read it before we play. We just pick it up and just sit at the table and imagine things and get stupid, and our kids are running around and we're half paying attention to the game, half paying attention to them. And it's been very light for us. So that's why I kind of think it belongs here, because we don't play it like a lot of people play it. We play it as like social lubricant. Like, we're doing this thing and we're also just hanging out. D&D 5th edition, it's a beautiful game. It's a beautiful time.
That's
everybody
awesome.
Should play it.
I got to play it at some point, man. Roll me up a dude and call me over, cuz I'm going to cast some spells and I'm going to just get some crits. I don't even know what I'm talking about right now, but like, I've heard people say those words before.
It sounded just like you knew what you were talking about.
Dude, I'm a gamer. What can I say?
You're like a pro.
Awesome. Yeah, D&D. All right, so mine's a little bit strange, I think. I've really taken to this game. I haven't played it as much as some other games, but I just love it. So my game of the year is Tales and Games, The Hare and the Tortoise from Yellow Games. And this is a little racing game. It's like it's almost like a kid's game. It comes in their kid's game box. Like, they have a game called Three Little Pigs and another one called Baba Yaga, which are more lighter kind of kids family games. And I think this one got a little overshadowed because of Camel Up being such a hit, and Camel Up winning the Spiel des Jahres is a race game where you bet on who's going to win the race. Because you do this in Hare and the Tortoise, too. Now, there's two Hare and the Tortoise. There's an original Hare and the Tortoise, which was like the 1980 Spiel des Jahres winner, which is a pretty cool game, too.
The very first Spiel des Jahres.
Yeah, I think it was. So it might have been 79 then. But anyway, that's geeky. So this
we did
one,
a show on.
It's Tales, Tales and Games. And Tales and Games, the Hare and the Tortoise, if you want to look it up on Board Game Geek. But it's really a really cool little hand management game, a little bit of pressure luck. You kind of you're betting secretly and you're trying to hedge your bets or not, or you can put all your eggs in one basket. But the idea is it takes Aesop's Fable and there's the hare and the tortoise, but it adds some other characters like the sheep and the wolf and somebody else, at least one other person. And you get dealt just a random character at the beginning, and that is the one you want to win because first, second, third place get points. And then you get to choose from a hand of cards that you get another character or the same character to either double your points or kind of hedge your bets a little bit. And then you're trying to manipulate these animals to win the race. And they all move a little bit differently. But the way that they move is this cool thing where you get to, on your card, play 1 to 4 cards from your hand. And you can play one type of animal at a time. And once there is either four of one type of animal on the table, or 8 cards total, then it shifts to the race phase where you have to look at the cards and move the animals. So one of them is like an X plus one, kind of however many cards there were played down plus one. The tortoise moves one unless something. I don't remember all these off the top of my head. That's how little I've played it, but how much I love it is just so, I don't know, it's just worth it anyway. What am I talking about? Okay, so I'm talking about how if you play one or two cards, then this one guy gets to move one space. If you play more cards, he gets to move two spaces. If the hare is in the lead, he gets cocky and he goes to sleep if you play too many cards, so he doesn't move at all. There's a the wolf, like there's a thing where there's three cards in the deck or a few cards in the deck where the wolf has a howling icon, and if that comes out, that means nobody else moves because they're all too scared the wolf is gonna eat them.
That
And it's just like it's just this
sounds
really.
cool.
Yeah, it's so good because you're thinking about, okay, what are he just played that. Is he trying to get rid of those cards from his hand so he can get some better cards, or does he really want the sheep to win? And it's fun, you know, and the components in this game, because Yellow does really good components in general. It comes with
Especially for
this,
this series.
yeah, it's like storybook magnetic box where it opens like a book, and then inside you have these really thick tiles that make up the race. The racetrack, and then there's these chunky wooden animal tokens that have stickers on them with the art, so you can actually like look at the animal and it matches what's on the cards. Really nice, smooth finish cards. And then there's also a finish line that's made from punch board, and it's totally frivolous. Like absolutely, it's like a checkered kind of line that's it looks like a hurdle kind of thing that you have to put together. And then the coolest part of the game is the winner's what's that called? The stand or whatever, like the three tiered. It's a cardboard winner's stand, you know. So like you like when one finishes, then you put them on top of the number one spot. And it's again totally frivolous, but adds a lot of flavor to the game. It's I played this game with an 8-year-old, not 8-year-old, I think he's 10, I guess. The 10-year-old and some 20-somethings. I played it with my wife as a 2-player game, and it's another game that's super easy to teach and has a lot of good decisions and good tension every turn. And it's my number one because it looks great, it plays great, it's a unique race game, which I love race games. And because, you know what, I think it's gonna get a little bit overlooked because of the hoopla surrounding Camel Up. And that is my number one, my top 10 this
We've
year.
done it. We've done it.
Oh man, we're
And
awesome.
we've managed to go over 20 minutes, and we've managed to actually go over 10 games for both of us because we did decimals.
Because we break our own rules every day.
And honorable mentions.
Well, I hope you all feel a little bit closer to us now after spending this year with us. It's been a really fun year, and we're just looking forward to year two. We're looking forward to sharing some more games and meeting you guys at conventions and interacting with you on Twitter. And hey, please point games to us if you think they fit what we talk about on the show, if we need to try them out. Give us your thoughts when we talk about a game that you think is terrible and we think is wonderful, because that stuff's fun too. So thanks a lot for tuning in and spending some time with us this year. You can find me on Twitter at Jason Katarski.
I'm at Andy_Lennox.
Thank you.